is now in session. This is your NET control station, Kilo India 7, Papa Kilo Lima, in Portland, Oregon, and my name is Roy. This NET meets every Monday at 8:10 p.m. local time. The primary purpose of this NET is to share information about Linux operating systems in regards to amateur radio use. Our primary link repeaters are 147.32 and 442.325, 444.125, and 147.040 MHz, all having a 100 Hz tone. Stations are reminded that compliance with the FCC rules, Part 97, for the amateur radio service require a station to transmit its assigned call sign on its transmitting frequency at the end of each communication and at least every 10 minutes during a communication. Time to turn it over to Mark KIC7NYR for Linux in the News. Take it away, my friend. This is KI7PK.
Absolutely. Thank you. Okay, a close look at Pinebook Pro, $199 Linux laptop. A new Linux laptop now available for pre-order. Got this from news.softpedia.com on July 20th. The number of Linux laptops that you can buy now is growing, and more companies notice the opportunity of investing in a platform whose adoption keeps improving. On the other hand, Pine64 is one of the companies that's always been very committed to Linux, so its device portfolio currently includes several models that customers can purchase at really good prices. Most recently, the firm announced a super affordable Linux laptop that will begin shipping in August. The Pinebook Pro, a new $199 laptop that comes with specs that for the casual user can be more than enough. But on the other hand, it's important to have a closer look at everything, especially if you are a power user that expects top performance from your next computer. First and foremost, its processor, Pine64, has equipped the Pinebook Pro with a 64-bit dual-core ARM 1.8-gig Cortex-A72 and a quad-core ARM 1.4-gig Cortex-A53 paired with a 4-gig LPDDR4 dual-channel DRAM memory. It goes without saying this isn't the kind of configuration that you'll typically find on a productivity workhorse, but it should be able to deal with the basic activities like browsing the web and sending emails pretty easily. In addition to the hardware specs mentioned above, the Pinebook Pro also comes with a 64-gig eMMC 5.0 storage, a quad-core T860 CPU chip with a standard Bluetooth 5.0 Wi-Fi Duo. In terms of connectivity, the new Linux laptop features a USB 3.0 and a one USB 2 and a Type A port and a Type C port that can be used for charging and for display. The rest of the features include headphone jack, micro SD card slot, a built-in microphone, and a 2.0 megapixel front camera. The display is a 14-inch IPS LCD resolution, 1920 by 1080, something that comes in line with the rest of the configuration, which should be able to serve its purpose very well. And it features a 10,000 milliamp battery, which should last 8 to 10 hours per charge. Depends on the series of factors, including how you use the device. A few other items. There's a small numbers, 1 to 3, of stuck or dead pixels are a characteristic of LCD screens. These are normal and should be considered not be considered a defect. So when fulfilling a purchase, please bear in mind that we are offering the Pinebook Pro at the price as a community service to the Pine64 Linux and BSD communities. They're also saying they do not make a profit from selling these units. So hopefully that won't happen to the users. So there you go. Coming out in August, the Pinebook Pro. That's all I got, KC7NYR. Back to net control.
Yeah, I think I want one of those. I've been looking at that for a while. And now that they're going on sale, yeah. Anyway, you get the idea. Anybody have any questions about the Pinebook Pro?
Alpha Echo 7, Golf Whiskey.
Alpha Echo 7, Golf Whiskey. Go ahead.
So with these laptops like the Pinebook Pro, will they run programs designed specifically for Raspberry Pi, or like do they port up well? Do they size well? Just wondering how that works. Back to you.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Well, it doesn't say specifically here, but they are ARM and ARM laptops. So I don't know. Maybe somebody else can answer that question. I would think at least you probably can load Raspbian on them if you want to, but I do not know the exact answer. Maybe somebody else on the net would know that. KC7NYR, back in that control.
Yeah, I know some about that. I was hoping somebody else knew more than me, because I've been meaning to look into that more deeply, just haven't gotten around to it. Anybody else want to take a shot at that?
Kilo Uniform Zero Lima.
KU0L, hey, welcome to the net. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the CPU is the same one they use on a Raspberry Pi 4, so it probably will run anything that a Pi 4 will run. Kilo Uniform Zero Lima.
Yeah, and that Pi 4 runs pretty well. I'm using one as my station computer, at least the HF computer anyway. And I run all kind of, you know, WSJTX and all kinds of stuff on there, and web browsers and video. And, yeah, that thing rocks. What I think I know about this is that they're kind of doing the same thing with, you know, bigger distributions like they're doing on the PinePhone a little bit. You can get... for example, you can get an Ubuntu that runs on a Raspberry Pi. There's another, a couple more. You can get Debian, and there's at least one or two other ones you can get on a Raspberry Pi. And this is really pretty much the same thing. I've been hearing a lot about Manjaro. It might be the most popular one for the Pinebook Pro. At least that's what they've been talking about on this Ubuntu Touch discussion I watch every couple of weeks. But yeah, we'll expect to see multiple distributions available for that. And, you know, a lot of them, the way it works right now is you flash them as opposed to install them. So some of your installation options may be, you know, just a little bit limited. All right, anybody else got something about that? This is KI7PKL.
KC7MM.
KC7MM.
Well, I just, we're taking a quick look at the blog. Pine64 blog for the Pinebook Pro, and there are a number of Linux distributions apparently that will run out, including Debian, and they're also saying that when it's released, by the time it gets released, they're also expecting it to run Chromium OS and Android 9, so quite a number of options apparently. That's the extent of my information, but there's a long blog article on it on the Pine64 .org website, and if you want more information, that's the place to go, KC7MM.
Yeah, and the good thing about that is, too, that they're not, you know, porting something to a completely different kind of device and having to kind of rebuild it from the ground up. So, yeah, this process goes a lot smoother, it appears, than, you know, something like operating systems for the PinePhone or something like that. All right, well, let's, at this point in the net, this is where we turn it over to see what people have been working on. I know people have been doing stuff this week. Sure, I enjoyed the stuff I've been seeing from WA90NY, that's for sure. Who's got something to talk about that you've been working on this week?
Kilo 7, Sierra Alpha Kilo.
There's Yuki, K7SJK. Take it away, my friend.
Thank you, Roy. Okay, so forgive me. 2 weeks ago or so, there was a station who was asking about getting their V-Star radio to talk on reflectors via a Pi Star or some sort of Pi with a hat, whether it was a jumbo or a zoom spot, and that they were having trouble with that. And forgive me, I don't remember which station that was. If that is you, are you on frequency, and have you figured it out yet? Because if not, I just found all the correct steps and all the ways that you can trip up over.
KS0T, that was me. Back to net control, very interested to find out what you have.
Red, you can...
Okay, so I ended up having to search for the right YouTube video. What it turns out, and this is one of the... Okay, the easiest pitfall when setting up your radio is that when you enter your call sign, you have to enter your call sign and then space all the way over to the right. There's like eight character spots to the right. And you have to put in B as in Bravo, or depending on which banner you're using. B is a 440, so set to using 440. And then on the next one, it should auto-fill, but it would be like your call sign is G as in golf. and then people mess that one up, or like you put it in and do one space only and do G or B rather. It has to go all the way over to the right. So that's the first thing. Roy, may I contact KS0T?
Oh, by all means, go ahead.
Yeah, so KS0T, K7SAK. Does that sound like a step that you followed? I'm looking for the actual YouTube video. I could send it to you via email.
K7SAK, this is KS0T. Yeah, I think I may have found the exact same video. I did confirm that I did get all the right spaces in there. Honestly, at this point, I actually think that it may just be that the hat that I've got has broken in some way, because I can't actually get it to work in any of the digital modes or even open the squelch when there's a signal on it. So, thanks for doing the research. If you got anything else, I'm all ears. KS0T.
KS0T, Kilo 7, Sierra Alpha Kilo. Well, if it doesn't work on any mode, then that is telling. I'm trying to think. There is, like, the fancy dashboard. I think if you go under considered duration and then you have experts, then there is a list, a long list of things, such as even, like, resetting the deviation. So if you're getting bit error rate loss, you could set the deviation a little bit. It's, like, negative 250 or whatever. But, let's see. I'm trying to look at my own dashboard right now. You're under expert. And there might be something in there that you could tweak and get functionality back. I'd be really bummed to hear if you're broke. There might be a way to fix it.
This is KS0T. Thanks for that, UT. I will go dig around in the advanced settings a little bit more, but I think at this point it seems likely that it's possible that I may have actually, in the process of diagnosing this, I took it apart several times and put it back together. It could be that I broke a pin or something like that. I need to check that. KSOT, back to you.
Oh, man, I'm really sorry to hear that. I don't know, maybe try a nuke and pave, last-ditch effort. I hope you get it, though. I'm glad you found that video. So KS0T, clearing with, or K7SAK, clear back to net.
Hey, very cool. Yeah, it's great when we, throw stuff out there and people actually know and can help us out. I remember one time on the Alaska morning that somebody helped me fix my garbage disposal right by the end of the net. Man, that was a good day. All right, any other comments on that? All right, well, who else has a project that they've been working on this week? Standing by.
This is WA9ONY.
I was hoping you'd pipe up. WA9ONY, this is KI7PKL. The mic is yours, my friend.
This week was how to run the code off of a non-micro SD card plugged in the bottom of the board. And I was successful in doing that on a USB devices and also a SSD drive. I ended up getting a variety of different performances using the diagnostics tool. The fastest is a blazingly fast USB device. The minimum benchmark for the Raspberry Pi for a read is 1,500, and this Corsair will do 13,000 in the read. Computers mostly do read. They also do write, and they're in sequential writes. So that was exciting to see a much higher performance and being able to boot and run the image of HamPi off of a USB device. I also tried a USB device, an HP 32 gig, and it had USB 3, but this thing's been around maybe 5-6 years. It was interesting when I loaded the image on that, it failed both the read and write test. It had really poor performance, but even with that poor performance, it powered up and HamPi launched and it was there on the screen. A month ago, YouTube had a variety of different videos how to do a boot on a USB device and run your code. Things have changed slightly. I would recommend, if you're interested in following this, you go to Explaining Computers. He had what I would call the most useful and up-to-date information. But even his information is somewhat dated. So fundamentally what you do is you do an APT update than an APT upgrade. In fact, that's the old style APT full upgrade. And then you go ahead and check your firmware for version. What you'll find is that it's sitting on probably a May date. And in June is when all this interesting activity, and there was a release after the Explaining Computers YouTube video for a stable release. So instead of using the beta, you use the stable in June, and that's all I did. You basically use command line command to load the firmware into the board, and now the board is knowledgeable about being able to boot off of a USB device. Also, I should explain that you should update your operating system so that your operating system also has the correct software to know what to do. So we're at this time. I've got several USB devices that are memory sticks, Corsair being the highest performance. I have an SSD card from King. The Corsair is expensive. I think it was like $70 for that USB device. Nice thing about the Kingston A400 flash SSD, excuse me, is that it was like $25. So that provides a really low-cost entry point to have a reasonable performance to run the Raspberry Pi. So that's what I've been working on, is learning how to boot using different devices to come up with HamPi. HamPi was my test image that I was using on all these different devices that I quickly configured to run off a USB port. This is WA901Y.
I just knew you were going to start talking about Berry Boot. Now, you really, a whole different direction than what I had imagined. We're definitely going to have to look into that. Anybody have any questions about that?
Yeah, Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo.
KG7, KGB, go ahead.
Yeah, hi David. So, I know you're playing with a Pi 4 with wood. Can you use an external boot drive like that on a Pi 3, or was there some magic that you need to use like the USB port, 3.0C port or something? That was the question. And then what did you find to be the most, cost-effective one to use?
I don't think it really makes sense to do it on anything but USB 3 interface. The Pi 3 doesn't have a USB 3 interface, so I probably wouldn't even bother to go in that direction. 3 interface is one of the key things. And if you want a low-cost solution, I would go ahead and use the Kingston A400 SSD plugged into the adapter that plugs into a USB port. And then what you can do is you can change the drive on that adapter. And that adapter, by the way, is a serial ATA to USB 3 device. That's about $12. And then the 120 gig SSD was about $25. This is WA901Y.
Any other thoughts or questions or comments on this?
KC7NY, or just a quick question.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Hey, David, did you post that to the IO groups? If not, could you? I definitely wanted to give it a try. KC7NYR, back to the net control.
Yeah, definitely. David's had a couple other things he's posted here the last week or so, too. I haven't had time to try them yet, but they're definitely on my list. The antenna modeling software, hey, I did install the HamPi, and never played with it much yet, but it sure was cool to see all those apps out there. Any other thoughts on this particular subject before we move on? All right, well, who else do we have out here this week that has something they've been working on? By the way, this is Cash Up PKL.
K7NGC with a general question.
K7NGC, go ahead.
Yes, I have a Samsung Chromebook, and I read an article where it was possible to load Linux onto that a Chromebook, and I just wondering if anybody has done that. I just ran across the article and printed it out, so I haven't really studied it. But anyway, if anyone has done that, I'd like to know if it was successful. K7NGC, back to net.
K7SAK.
All right, go ahead, Yuki.
Hey, that's a great question. And I haven't had personal experience, so I will default to someone who does. But on the Linux podcast I used to listen to, they would talk about this. And from what I can remember is that it's certainly possible, but it actually does depend on which manufacturer, you know, like each one's own drivers. And kernel support might favor some and not others. But good chances are that you actually should be able to if you have one and are planning to try it. K7SA gave back to that.
Yeah, I heard pretty much the same thing, too. Just exactly what you just said. In fact, I have in my possession a computer that will only run the Windows 8 that is on it. It is so locked down with safety net type stuff, it won't even boot to another, external media with Windows. So, you know, some of them are getting like that, so you always really anymore, you know, you're going to buy a computer like that, you always have to pretty much look it up on the internet, see what other people who have tried it have to say about that. Any other comments on that? Yeah, it's frustrating when you have a computer that will only run Windows. It just is. All right, any other topic we have going on here this week?
K7SAK.
K7SAK.
Hey, Roy, I know you're stirring up the PinePhone fan base here, and rightly so. But if any of you are still interested in trying to install a custom ROM such as Lineage OS on an old Android device, beware. Because if you get your device from Google, you will be successful. But if you end up with a Verizon variant, they, for whatever evil reason, have locked the bootloader, and there's nothing you can do about it. I've tried a hacky fix that worked for other people on the internet, and it didn't work for me. So you just have to be careful, and it can be really difficult to sell, and your vendor may not be willing to check it for you before they sell it to you. Mine was not. So that's just something to think about now that we're talking about lockdown hardware. K7SAK, back to net.
Oh, man, do you see the smoke coming out of my ears and the fire coming out of my nostrils? Last year, I bought a OnePlus 7 Pro from the Un-carrier. I misunderstood the research. I guess I didn't research it far enough. I was able to SIM unlock it so I could take it and use it on another carrier, but I absolutely could not unlock the bootloader so I could flash it or root it or nothing. And I finally got rid of the stupid thing, and that's all I wanted to say about that. Yeah, boy, you can't be too careful. Another thing with that, too, that's happening a lot more. Verizon's been bad. They've done this before. To people. I have a Pixel XL. When they came out with the Pixel XL, that one was locked. That was about 3 or 4 years ago. The advice I've been hearing lately is when you buy a phone, you probably want to buy the international version. Don't buy it from any carrier. All right, any other thoughts on that? Lineage OS or anything of that nature?
KC7MM.
And K7SAK with a question.
All right, we got KC7MM, and then we have K7SAK after that.
Talking about the lockdown bootloaders and so forth brought me back to K7NGC's question. I haven't actually converted a Chromebook myself, but I had a friend who had a couple of Chromebooks, and I did some research for him on whether he could install Linux on them. And my recollection is that it does vary indeed from model to model, and even manufacturer to manufacturer, and even model to model within their line. And you were going to have to unlock it and flash the bootloader, I think it was, to get Linux to install. So you need, just like on the phones, you need to do your research on that and make sure your model will do it, and that you can. There's a site where you can download that. That software to flash. KC7MM.
Okay, very cool. Yuki, go ahead.
Hi, this is K7SAK. So, question for you, Roy, about where you got your OnePlus. So, that's a phone that is I would say, among Linux users, is known as having high support for Lineage OS. Where is it that you bought yours? You mentioned buying the international version. So, I imagine that's a bit of a barrier to being able to get the right kind. Without actually inadvertently getting one locked down. Over.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I got it from the Un-carrier. That was T-Mobile. And, I don't want to just get into bashing T-Mobile. I'm pretty upset with them over that. $700 I spent on that stupid thing. It was a great phone, too. It had awesome video playback. It was loud, had great sound, good video. It did everything great. But I made the mistake. I didn't have any money at the time, so I just went and got it, and I paid it off in 3 months, and it was all good, I thought. Until after, you know, after I didn't want to mess with it until I'd paid for it this time, as opposed to what I used to do, where I'd, you know, get the thing home, and I'd take this, you know, expensive phone I just bought, plug it into my computer, and void the warranty before I paid for it. And, yeah, when I tried that, I discovered, you know, the truth about that. And there is actually possibly a way to do it. You go to OnePlus and sign up on their website and go through some gyrations. And as I was reading the terms and conditions for, you know, signing up on OnePlus's website, it gets down to the end, this is governed by the laws of the People's Republic of China. No, I am not going to be subject to the laws of Red China. So that was the end of that. I got rid of it. Anybody else have any thoughts on this?
Follow-up question, K7SAK.
Go ahead, Yuki.
Hey, so you, I'm so sorry to hear all of that, by the way, but you did mention that the best bet would be to buy an international version. Do you have any recommendations on where to go looking for those, or would that just be a keyword to include on, say, eBay?
Yeah, I don't know the best place to go. When I was, you know, at various times shopping for phones, well, I've seen them on Amazon, so that's probably where I'd start. Probably with Amazon. They typically have, you know, if you're shopping for a particular phone, they typically have all the versions of it too. They'll have, you know, the T-Mobile, the Verizon, the AT&T, and hopefully the international version as well. And the international version should do you okay. I think Google was mentioned at some point, and, you know, yeah, buying a phone from Google, and that's, you know, pretty much the international version as I understood it. Any other comments? All right, we got a little time here. Anybody else? I'll do mine here in a little bit, but anybody else have any projects they're working on this week? Let's hear from you.
KC7NYR.
KC7NYR. This is KI7PKL. Go ahead.
Yeah, mine's going to be pretty fast. Last week I told everybody I was going to load the HamPi image, so I took my SD card out, and David had brought up how easy it was. Extremely easy, and as you did, Roy, it beautiful. It loaded right up, and oh my, it's so fun. I only tinkered with a couple of the 80 programs. It runs fantastic, so I'm just into HamPi, and it's a great experience. So the feedback is, if you are a ham radio operator and you don't want to preload all this stuff on your Raspberry Pi, grab HamPi, and the image is fantastic. That's all I got. KC7NYR, back to you.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, great place to try out stuff. Or if you just got something in kind of a hurry and you need a, you need a computer with a bunch of ham software on it, hey, that's a, that's a good way to get her done really, really fast. So, and my screensaver just kicked in. So, any other comments on that while I'm typing in my password to my screensaver?
Yeah, no, I know why with questions.
Go ahead, David.
Just wondering which programs you'd used on the, HamPi. I focused on NEC, which is Numerical Electromagnetic Calculations, which is an antenna modeling software that was on there, and I was playing around with that most of my time. I was just wondering what applications have you played around with. This is WA901Y.
Well, that's for me, KC7NYR. Well, I tinkered with the logging programs. I do use the PiQSO. Logging program already, so I got three more to try for the logging programs. So I started there. I looked at the Morse code program briefly. I also looked at the training program, so you can run your ham tests right through the Pi. And then of course Chirp. I know that's going to work fine for my Baofeng radios. Something I do want to look at though, let me reset. Two programs that I still need to try, David and everybody on the net. PAT, which is a program that we all like to try. It's a WinLink version, which is really a Windows program. That's a Linux version. So PAT is one I'm going to be trying, and also Qtel, which I like to use as well for EchoLink. So there I am, and boy, there's plenty to go. KC7NYR, back to net control.
Yeah, it doesn't look that different from just a regular Pi, right, at first, until you hit the right menus. There are three or four menus engineer, whoa, there's a lot of stuff here all of a sudden. Any other comments on that? All right, well, I'll go next then. Been a pretty busy week around here again. One of those weeks where I did everything but Linux most of the time. I hired a contractor to build my new, I'm calling it my new remote emergency operations center out in the backyard. I'm also going to store my garden tools in it too as well. And then I got into this new cooking toy for a little while too. But I finally, towards the end of about the weekend, started playing with Pinephone again. And, hey, there was something that I discovered, which we've been waiting for a long time, since the very beginning, before most of us even had a Pinephone. We saw a video of some developer playing with the camera. And we thought, okay, it's like months later. Finally, today, I tried the camera app, like I always do, you never know. And what's that? I see on the corner, it was an image. It wasn't a great image, but it was an image. I went outside in direct sunlight, took a picture, and it came out pretty good. I also took a picture of my solar power system, which is under my desk, where it's pretty dark. I used the flash. The camera flash didn't work, but the flashlight app did work, so I turned it on with the flashlight app. The picture was kind of dark. But, hey, they're getting there. I have one distribution now. Has the camera app working, iPod? By the way, there's no video yet, but so I was pretty happy to see that. Then I went over and checked on Ubuntu Touch. I just gotten done watching the bi-weekly Ubuntu Touch Q&A show that they do on YouTube on Saturdays. And, I thought I heard him say something about loading contacts via vCard, so I fired up the... I have two of them. I have fired up the development channel, the one that gets the development channel updates, and went into contacts, and sure enough, you can import contacts. I tried it. I have a vCard that's been out there, part of my test data since the beginning, and sure enough, I have all my contacts on the Pinephone now on Ubuntu Touch development channel. I don't have them anywhere else, but I have them there. iPod. Also, I've been having trouble with text the past few weeks, and I discovered just today, it works on 4G now. And once I switched it over to 4G, which didn't work, worked somewhat, used to be the texts worked, and you could receive a phone call, but you couldn't initiate a phone call. Well, now you can initiate a phone call set for 4G, and texts are working again, although MMS texts aren't working yet, but looking in the app, it looks like they're getting close because they have settings for MMS, like when to allow MMS. So I'm surprised it didn't work today, but I suspect it will pretty soon. By the way, the stable version hasn't been updated since July 5th, so there's not too much to talk about there. Right now, all the exciting stuff's good. Well, I guess that's how it usually is. All the exciting stuff is in the development version. Okay, there's one more. iPod? Hey, we were talking about Manjaro a little bit ago. Manjaro is a variant of Arch Linux, and I looked it up. I guess Arch Linux is like its own thing. It's not like a, whatever you call that from some other distribution. So anyway, the Ubuntu guys actually had a couple of Manjaro developers on as guests. And as they pointed out, yeah, we're in competition, but we don't hate each other. You know, we cooperate. You don't get ahead by knocking the other guy down. You get ahead by doing stuff. So, pretty good attitude, I thought. So anyway, after watching these guys talk and listening to them, I came in here and downloaded the image for Manjaro and put it on, and then it worked pretty good. It calls work. Web browsing works good. I was in the middle of watching the video. I watched most of the rest of it on the Pinephone. It did a really good job. And they did mention that they're planning to do a community edition Pinephone at some point in the near future. So, hey, kind of a sleeper back in the pack coming forward. That's Manjaro. iPod? Haven't tested Postmarket OS in a few couple of weeks at least. I was going to do that one today, but they ran out of SD cards and... I just need to get more SD cards. that's just the name of the game, I guess. All right, that's it for me. Anybody have any questions, comments, or anything else right now?
K7SAK.
K7SAK, go ahead, Yuki.
Thank you. Your comment about SD cards just reminded me. There was one SD card that I believe, what did I do to it? I cold cut the power on a Pi, Raspberry Pi, that it was running in. I think maybe one too many times. I don't believe I cold pulled the, or hot pulled rather, the SD card while it was powered on, but I ripped the power out by accident without a proper shutdown. And now what is that I'm not able to perform any new, whatchamacallit, not defragging, that's Windows, what am I talking about? Wiping? What is that word for wiping, Roy?
You mean like reformat?
Thank you. I'm not able to reformat it in any using any of my GUI tools. I haven't tried touching it with DD yet, but I'm a little bit nervous when it comes to DD at all because I've wiped the wrong partitions by mistake before. Does anyone have any suggestions on how to fix this? It's only like a 16 gig SD card, but I'd love to rescue it if I could. K7SAK.
Did that myself a while back. Any words of wisdom on that?
Comment, AI7BL.
AI7BL, or something like that. They're a little bit in the noiser. Go ahead.
Can you mount it to a Linux file system and see it as a regular device?
Yes, I can. Just cannot perform any reformatting or any actions on it. Just, what does it do? It just kind of blinked and then didn't do anything.
I believe that if you run a command called David, that should work and write to the boot sector, so you need to write to block 0. So just write it.
Okay, thank you for coming back. As Roy said, you were a bit in the noise there, but you said to use DD Delta, which I am nervous about. Well, what was your follow-up comment on using Delta?
Okay, copy. Clear.
Okay, I'm not entirely sure what just happened there. Any more comments on that? AI7BL?
No.
Okay, I'll throw mine out. Yeah, I did that to my All-Storing over a while back, and it's so easy to do that to a Pi because it's, you know, it's just plugged into a USB cable, and there are so many good ways you can do it. You turned off the power strip, or you accidentally pulled the cable out, or whatever, and I did that to my nose. I've done it to it plenty of times before, but this time it happened to be writing just at that exact moment. And it did corrupt it. The good thing was I was able to mount the card on another computer and get the data off that I wanted because I keep logs and, you know, stuff like that. And so I was able to save all of my data. That was a good thing. And I did the same thing that's been suggested. Yeah, I did a DD command. And yes, I hear what you're saying, Yuki. You want to be really careful because you don't want to, like, wipe out your system partition or, you know, some important other thing. Yeah. For a while, it was my file server that was the most convenient one to plug stuff into. And after a while, you know, I just got in the habit of taking the external hard drive off so that I couldn't actually write to it because that would have been such a disaster. But yeah, that worked for me. I used a I just wrote over, flashed something else over top of it, and it worked fine. Over to you, Yuki.
AI7BL and K7PKL, thank you for coming back. I'm pretty chicken when it comes to DD, but I will give it a shot, see if I can rescue this poor baby. Thank you for coming back, K7SAK.net.
KC7MM.
Yeah, go ahead, Rod.
I'm just going to throw out, Yuki, you might try something that I just recently discovered. Raspberry Pi now has an official Raspberry Pi imager that they provide. They've got versions for Windows, Mac, OS and Ubuntu, and you find it on their download page on the raspberrypi.org website, and that will put the image on the SD card for you. Whether it'll work in this particular case, I can't say because I haven't used it, but it sounds safer than DD, so that's the Raspberry Pi imager, KC7MM.
Then I had that thought too. You know, you could just go out and get another SD card. The one that you would have replaced this one had you not been able to save it. And, you know, install Raspbian on that and, you know, do it that way. And then maybe, or assuming you have a card reader to plug into a Raspberry Pi, I might be assuming too much there. I invested in a USB card reader. Man, I use that thing all the time. I carry it from computer to computer, and, man, I use that thing a lot. Any other comments? All right, well, we are at about 5 minutes after the hour, about the point in time where we're supposed to close, so I'll go ahead and say the Linux Usernet is now closed at... why do I do this to myself? There we go. 9:05 local time. The net operates through the courtesy of the Amateur Radio Relay Group Incorporated. If you want to learn more about supporting this repeater system, please visit Alpha Radio Radio Gulf at www.arrg.org. If you have questions, feedback, or comments, send an email to linuxusernet@kc7nyr.com. For past sessions with links to reference material, search our Linux page located at kc7nyr.com or kc7mm.com. We thank all stations who participated and those who stood by to give us a clear operating frequency. Continue the discussion with us on the Linux Usernet group at groups.io. This is Kilo India 7, Papa Kilo Lima, returning the frequency to normal amateur use.
Yeah, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Just to follow up on the, I need to get a 128 gig micro SD card because I want to make a Kiwik server. Put all of Wikipedia on it. Anybody have a favorite brand or place to buy such a creature?
WA9ONY.
Kilo Uniform 0 Lima.
I think David was first there. Go ahead, this KG7GDB.
You want to get a Lexar. Lexar's the fastest out there. Lexar 633 micro SD. If you go ahead and take a look at the benchmarks, I posted a photo of a 32 gig. What you want, of course, is you want the bigger model, but I have not found a micro SD card that beats it in the speed test I've done. WA9ONY.
Yeah, thank you, David. Who else had a suggestion for me there? Go ahead.
Kilo Uniform 0 Lima. Lexar or CNY, they seem to be the most robust for when it comes to things like they were just talking about at the end of the net of not self-destroying when things go awry. So that would be another great choice. Kilo Uniform 0 Lima.
Yeah, sorry, my hearing wasn't working very well. Could you just repeat that brand again there, if you would, and if it's just a couple of letters, maybe do it phonetically.
Sure. Papa November Yankee, PNY. Theirs are very robust SD cards. KU0L.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Yeah, this, I don't know if you've heard of, maybe you've heard of this Kiwix server, but it's kind of a neat distro that you download, makes a little kiosk on a Raspberry Pi, and then you need about 90 gig of storage space, but you can check off all of Wikipedia with the photos, creates an offline storage system, and then it actually goes ahead and does the host APD thing for you on the image, so the image is ready to boot and creates a Wi-Fi hotspot that you just configure in. And people can wander in range of your Pi and look up things on Wikipedia with photos and everything.